Hello. Welcome to the PC Gamer Show. I'm Wes Fenland. It's August 23rd, 2017. We're still in 2017, unfortunately. but we'll make it through somehow, as Beau says. So joining me, Beau Moore.
Hello.
And Rachel Weber, our recent co-worker from GamesRadar, actually.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
And we've been trying to get you on the podcast the last couple of weeks, and we decided to pull you in this week to help us talk about, like, all the Gamescom news, Age of Empires, little Shenmue action you might have seen, Star Wars.
Would you call Jurassic it action, World. Or would you call it lack of action?
Maybe lack of action. There was some questionable kung fu going on. But yeah, we have a lot of news from Gamescom to talk about this week. We've got some PC games. As you may have noticed, I am not James Davenport. I got James sick last week or the week before.
You got
before.
Everyone sick.
I got everyone in the office.
You've been cycling the sickness.
I had like
a
minor cold that I thought like, oh, it'd be fine if I come back into work and infect everyone with it. So that is what I did. So James is out this week. He sounds kind of like Marge's sisters.
Yeah, there's huskiness
from The Simpsons. Yeah, some husks, some phlegm going on. Yeah. So I'm taking over the show, and we're going to talk about PC games.
Let's do it.
So we usually start off just going through what we've been playing. We can kind of hit that briefly and then move on to all the Gamescom news that we have to discuss this week. So I'm going to say, Rachel, you go first. Tell me, what have you been playing this week?
I have taken a break from my Elder Scrolls Online addiction to play some Observer, the kind of weird brain hijacking.
Oh, yeah. So that's the same devs who did Layers of Fear.
Yeah, Bluber, last
year or the year before. Yeah. It's been maybe a couple of years since that came out. James was not a big fan of Layers of Fear.
I liked it, but then I'm down for any kind of weird narrative horror stuff. And this is kind of a step up from that. Layers of Fear was very much a kind of walking simulator with some paintings. This is much more kind of interactive, kind of investigating crime scenes. But mm-hmm. I like the whole vibe of it, the kind of Blade Runner,
yeah,
sad
the
old
look
man.
Of it. I'm like, it's super cyberpunky, and I really wanted. I was like, oh, this looks really cool. I want to play it, but then I can't do horror stuff. I hate scary things, and so I hear that it actually is quite scary.
The cyberpunk is not enough to pull you in. The scaredy cat nature of
pretty much
of Beau has overruled that.
Yeah, you kind of have to jack into people's brains, and there's this kind
creepy.
Of weird, trippy. Different kind of memory scenes, and then there's some kind of creature that's stalking people, and there's a lot of disemboweled bodies, and
does it feel like authentically cyberpunk? Like, does it use kind of the sci-fi as not just a window dressing, but like a really cool
it's kind of,
does it have a message, does it matter?
I'd say it's like cyberpunk light. I mean, there's definitely like all shady corporations and kind of this idea that, people have these augmentations, and some people, the Immaculate, have decided not to have them, and, how that's affecting people's lives. But that's all very much like set dressing.
Gotcha. Okay. I think that's the way a lot of cyberpunk games go, a lot of cyberpunk stuff. They get the aesthetic or pieces of the aesthetic. They get the tropes in there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily have like a great statement to make about this. The way technology influences society and like the messed up ways that we're interacting with it.
Yeah, there's kind of, things are messed up, but there's not really a kind of statement coming out of that. It's just like, oh, things are messed up. Look at
have you seen the Catherine Bigelow's movie from about, I think it was right before the millennium, Strange Days? Kind of reminds me of Observer, because it has this idea of, you're not exactly jacking into other people's brains like Ghost in the Shell style, but there's this weird like pulp like fetish community around like snuff films and stuff that you can like VR into and sort of experience through somebody else's eyes, like what it's like to be murdered or something like that. And that's what I think of when I think of horror and cyberpunk kind of mixing.
Yeah.
That's a good movie. All right. Beau, what have you been playing?
Surprisingly, not Overwatch very much lately, although I have always been playing it some. But no, I've been playing something different, which is finally visiting a game that I've been meaning to play for a long time.
Oh, I know what this is.
And it's very exciting. For, I think, good reason, based upon current events, is I was playing Wolfenstein The New Order. And it's fantastic. And yeah. I killed a whole bunch of Nazis.
Did you keep count?
I did not keep count. I wonder if the game has like a stat.
It should have a Nazi counter in there somewhere.
I killed a lot of Nazis, and it was pretty great.
Yeah, that game.
I love that game.
I mean, I think at the time when it came out, everyone who played it then was really surprised that just you could do a really good linear shooter campaign and not really in the style of, I guess, Call of Duty had sort of been the template for what a linear shooter looks like these days.
Yeah.
And Wolfenstein didn't try to have like really open environments with a million approaches and like super complex AI. It was very narrative driven. The environments were pretty straightforward. You had like a few branching paths and like some stealth options, right?
For the most part, it's very, very linear.
It just turns out like if your story's really good and your gunplay just feels really good and looks really good, like you can make a damn good shooter like that. And that was super refreshing.
Yeah.
And I think Doom kind of did the same.
Yeah. Doom definitely.
Similarly refreshing.
Doom came later, right?
Yeah.
Doom definitely followed up on that.
This is good
because
now you'll be primed for
It was one of those games that like people were telling me like, because it wasn't on my radar at all coming out. Like I wasn't a big Wolfenstein fan growing up or anything. And so I was just like, oh, there's a new Wolfenstein game. And I kind of wasn't even really playing shooters at the time. So it was before Overwatch consumed my soul, and I sort of just missed it, but then everybody had told me how good it was and that it was worth playing, and so with the follow-up coming soon, I was like, well, I guess I should finally get around to playing this game. And
so was Wolfenstein really fresh in your mind? And Rachel, since you played it too, I'm curious what you think. Like, is there anything you really want to see in the sequel that we've seen like a few trailers, we've done some hands-on, but we don't know the full scope of the new game.
I just really love the way they do kind of world building and that kind of crazy, but actually not that crazy anymore, vibe. From what we've seen, the kind of little films and things they've done so far, I feel like there's just going to be more of that, like turning that up to 11.
I remember when the first game came out, and there's this sequence when you're on the train and you have to serve the Nazi villainous like tea or something.
Yeah.
And I remember Evan like comparing that scene and some other parts of the game to kind of a Tarantino-esque feel of this just like kind of weirdly surreal setting with kind of the dialogue is sort of stilted, but really characterful. And I think at the time we were like, I don't know if a game can pull off channeling Tarantino, like good luck trying it. And I think that worked pretty well, and I'm curious to see how they change that in the new one with like kind of the more 60s weird 60s vibe they're going for.
They're really good at that kind of it's over the top but in a kind of stylized way that makes it seem cool rather than try hard, that they just pushing it just that little bit further, and I think that really works because the action in any shooter, what you're doing is so ridiculous anyway, the actions you're taking, that actually it suits having a story that's as batshit as you running around with unlimited guns.
So we've got BJ in a wheelchair for at least part of the game.
Yes.
And then he's going to be in like a weird, maybe some kind of body suit or like brace thing to keep him moving, because at the end of the first game, he's in pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played a bit of the wheelchair section, which is fun because suddenly you're shooting everyone in the crotch because that's your natural. And then I played a bit later on when he's, I think, kind of restored in whatever manner that is, and is dressed as a fireman.
Nice.
Buttface Jones in the chat suggested replacing all the stealth segments with large, loud shooting segments and replacing all the laser cutter bits with large, loud shooting segments. So I think we know where his tastes lie for the sequel.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable...
I kind of like the stealth.
I actually really enjoyed the stealth stuff.
When you could pull it off. I think I failed at it more often than not and ended up just going out, guns blazing, shooting everything. But
I like to know stealth is an option so I can ignore it.
I'm totally about the stealth, and it's like reminded me that I really need to go and play more like focused stealth stealthy games.
Some Dishonored.
Yeah, I gotta get back in there.
I have no patience.
I love the stealth stuff. Like, even in, like, Far Cry, even, like, Far Cry 3 or whatever, which is, like, super open world, yeah. And it's, like, kind of hard to plan these stealth encounters. I was like, yeah, I want to stealth in behind and drag people's bodies around and stuff like that.
Did you have any good stealth kills in Wolfenstein that stick out to you, you remember?
Not especially, because, like, the stealth stuff, the animations were... It wasn't like Dishonored where, like, if you did something, you couldn't, like, contrive these, like, elaborate, you know, machinations of taking somebody out from stealth. And
it's pretty much stab them with a knife.
Yeah, yeah. And there also wasn't, like, there wasn't too many... There's some stealth kill games where, like, if you're hanging from a ledge or if you're dropping down, like, the direction you're coming from changes the, like, stealth kill animation, whereas this was basically just, like, sneak up behind them and stab them or shoot them or something. But I feel like there was one or two where, like, I got a good, like, sneak up, stab, and then, like, knife throw kill on, like, two more guys or something that felt pretty good.
I imagine, if anything, the sequel will have... Some more animations just for those kind of kills.
I feel like I've seen some screenshots with, you know, neck slicing.
I mean, there were some varied animations for sure, but, like, I guess I'm talking more about, like, when you're coming from different directions or different angles. Like, if you drop down and do a stealth kill, that's, like, in Assassin's Creed, that's a different animation than if you're coming up from below or just stabbing them in the back.
That one's coming up pretty soon. Looking forward to Wolf sequel for sure. I don't have too much to report for now playing. I think the same stuff I talked about last week, but I've been playing a good bit of Lawbreakers with Evan and Tyler and Lucas, who also works for GamesRadar, with Rachel. And yeah, Lawbreakers is a lot of fun. Since last week, I kind of started with, like, the basic kind of Call of Duty character who's just, like, he has a assault rifle and he can throw a grenade and he can run quickly. And, like, that his skill set is very basic, very easy to play with, but he's pretty solid, like, all arounder. But I've switched from him to a class, I think, called the Juggernaut. If I remember right, there's, like, a Juggernaut and a Titan, which is, like, the same word, basically. But the Juggernaut is this big robot guy who is probably the slowest character in the game. But the trade-off for that is most of the characters have an ult with a cooldown of, like, a minute or something that's a super powerful laser beam or rocket or something like that. And this guy's ult, you can trigger about every 5 seconds, and it is a shield where he, like, armors up and you get probably, like, triple your health pool or something like that, and you're very slow walking around, but you can tank a ton of damage. And you can also throw up a wall, like Mei style from Overwatch, which honestly feels unfair in Lawbreakers, because it's this really fast moving game. So much of it is about moving around other characters, getting behind them, and a lot of it takes place out in these large kind of, like, anti-grav areas in the center of maps. But when you're playing some of the games that involve base defense, like you have to score a ball in somebody's base, or you have to take this battery back to your base and charge it, as this character, you can just throw up a wall that completely blocks a corridor, and that will just ruin people's chances of, like, getting into your base to steal something or get to the kind of, like, the territory point that you're accruing points in. So it feels pretty extremely satisfying, but also pretty unfair when someone's, like, coming in getting ready to use your ult and you just throw up a shield that just stops them for 5 seconds, and they just have to stand there and just kind of, you can see their outline through the shield of the other person, of them standing there, and just like, yep, sorry, you're stuck there now.
Like the Lawbreakers party pooper, just it, like rolling
yeah, you,
in.
You are the party pooper.
This guy.
For sure. But he also has a very satisfying shotgun to use. And people who are really good with the fast-moving characters can kind of get behind you and fuck you up pretty quickly. But if you get a good aim on somebody with that shotgun as they're coming in, like, you can...
Nice.
Knock them out in one or two shots. So that's Lawbreakers, continuing to have fun with that. Evan carries us every game, though. It'll be like the scoreboard will be Evan, 23 kills, 4 deaths, and then Tyler or me or Lucas with, you know, 7 kills or something underneath that. But, you know, I'm going to say that it's all about the teamwork.
Yeah.
So we make it work together. So yeah,
that's
if you
beautiful.
Haven't,
that's a beautiful message.
If you haven't tried Lawbreakers yet, I recommend it. It's a good time. All right, so should we move on to some games? Gamescom
yeah.
news?
Games.
Yeah, games. So what have you guys been most excited about out of Gamescom this week?
New Age of Empires.
New Age of Empires. That one is pretty exciting. And
well, I mean, cool. A teaser trailer saying Age of Empires.
We haven't, we haven't seen it yet. Yeah. But it exists. It's being made by Relic.
Yes.
Who, this is kind of an interesting thing that Microsoft has done twice now, I guess. First with Halo Wars 2, they got the Creative Assembly to make that game. And the Creative Assembly is owned by Sega. So that's kind of unusual, I think. And now Relic, also owned by Sega, is yeah. making another real-time strategy game for Microsoft. And this one doesn't even seem, at least right now, to be coming to Xbox. I don't think they've talked about that at all. So they're making a PC-exclusive new strategy game in 2017. That's pretty cool.
I'm so excited. I, you know, as I think probably loads of people did, like, grew up playing so much Age of Empires. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the sound of the priest and everything is, like, burned into my brain. And
yeah, Age of Empires was my real-time strategy game that I played probably more.
Yeah.
Like, I obviously played, like, a lot of Warcraft and Starcraft 2, but it was, like, Age of Empires way more so than Command & Conquer. I didn't really get to play much of that one.
Was it Age of Empires 1 for you guys or 2? Because for me, it was 2.
It was 2 mostly. I feel like I maybe played 1 some, but definitely a lot of 2.
2 feels like one of those games that just completely, like, subsumed its predecessor. Like, when people talk about Age of Empires, mm-hmm. it's like
they're
Street Fighter, right? Like,
yeah.
If someone says Street Fighter, they're not talking about Street Fighter 1. They're talking about Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
And I feel like Age of Empires was kind of the same the same story. So Microsoft had announced, was it at E3? Or maybe it was earlier this year that they're doing the definitive edition.
I believe it was at the PC Gaming Show.
I think, I couldn't remember if that was the first time they announced it.
I think that was the first time. Yeah, yeah
I believe we announced that.
Yeah.
I thought so. I wasn't
positive.
Beyond
brand so. You guys.
That was the
revealed.
First time they showed that one off.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And at the time they were saying, you know, oh, there might be some more Age of Empires stuff in the future. So that has happened.
Yes.
We've got Age of Empires 4, and they also announced that they're going to do the same definitive kind of remastering and also touching up some features, bugs, mm-hmm. kind of antiquated elements for Age of Empires 2 and 3,
yeah.
which is
that's really cool,
especially exciting, yeah, because we can kind of play Age 2, not just the HD version on Steam, which is already a nice version of the old game,
yeah. mm-hmm.
but play a game with presumably, like, better online support. They probably are patching some exploits and stuff.
That's it. Like, you go in there, it's that kind of nostalgia thing, isn't it? If you go back into the kind of Steam HD version, you go like, oh, yeah, no, this, you know, I've been so trained by games in the years since then for things to be kind of streamlined and a bit better that you kind of go back and go, it's not quite how I remember. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it all being.
Did either of you play Age 3?
I don't think so.
How was that one? Because I know it wasn't received as well as the first two. It was quite a few years later.
Yeah, I think this is years back now, but I think, I believe I got it for a birthday or something. And I remember being, like, excited by the novelty of kind of new things and new
graphics.
Yeah,
much more detailed, right?
You know, tech trees and things, but still finding myself going back to 2 and just playing more 2.
I'm really curious if the third one is going to get sort of the heaviest touch in terms of tweaking anything that mm-hmm. was maybe wrong with that game. I don't really know why it never felt like kind of the great sequel to Age of Empires 2. I mean, maybe Age of Empires 2 is just one of those games that
it
came out at the right time. It had the right features. It was designed so well that almost any sequel was going to inevitably be a disappointment.
When did it come out? Three?
I want to say, like, 2007.
I feel like
I could be totally off. I'm just guessing.
I mean, I'm guessing that basically, like, were RTS games really that popular around then? I mean, that's around the time when StarCraft II came out.
I think they were on the way down. So it was 2005 when H3 came out. So it was definitely a waning period for RTS. But that's around the time
it's
Command
like
Conquer
the
3 came out, which was a great game.
It's like the quiet period between the, I guess, golden age of Age 2 and Warcraft 2 and Starcraft and all that, and then if you could call it a resurgence, which basically I'm just saying like Starcraft 2 coming out and I'm guessing that was like 06 or 07.
Let's look up when was Starcraft 2. I feel like it was later than that. 2010.
So
there was definitely a dry period there, and unfortunately I think that has kind of continued for everything except Starcraft 2.
Even Starcraft 2 is not super popular itself. It gave way a lot towards the MOBA genre in general.
RTSs as well really fell victim to being the thing that everyone tried to make free to play, and that really just sucks.
And then they just all became MOBAs. Pretty much. I think
even Age of Empires had a free to play, which I desperately tried to
Siege, is that what it was called?
I can't remember now. It was Age of Empires Online or something, and it was like a free to play thing, and it just bad.
I have one of my uncles who has kind of dabbled in games over the years. Like I gave him Warcraft 2 when I was a kid just because I wanted him to play Warcraft 2. And he had like a PS2 and, you know, would play Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that. Every year I go back to visit family and see him, and like he's still playing this bad like Windows Store Age of Empires free to play game. That's like a touchscreen game, you know, and like and he'll usually say something like, you know, yeah, I get kind of bored with this, but then like I come back the next year and like he still has been playing it at least a little bit. So I guess it's fun enough. I don't know. There's kind of that core appeal to Age of Empires. It's just like this great historic setting, and the ability to kind of upgrade over the ages is just like there's this satisfaction in pushing your civilization forward that I guess works even
I just used to hide one priest in a bush. And then, like, every stray kind of enemy worker or soldier that would walk past would just convert them. It'd take days of just converting everyone that walked past.
I loved just building walls. That was my thing.
I was the consummate turtle in Age of Empires.
That was the thing. I was never good at competing in any of the strategy games, but when we'd play with my friends,
fine base.
Just like it was so much satisfaction in building your base up and then be like, okay, nobody attack each other for 4 hours. I need to build a wall over, you know, a quarter of the map that's just like 20-mile wall for no reason.
I would just like make walls out of turrets, basically.
Yeah, it was so fun to just build your civilization in those games, and then let the enemy just crash against your gates.
It was almost like a proto tower defense situation almost.
I like looking up like screenshots of people's crazy Age of Empires bases. We had one of our freelancers, Jody, wrote a really fun article I think last year about like the joy of turtling in strategy games, and I went looking for screenshots for that and inevitably found some screenshots of Age of Empires bases where it was just, you know, 17 walls thick around, you know, half the map or something.
I love that in any of those kind of games, like Don't Starve. I loved watching people's videos of their insane. I've got, you know, 17 slow cookers over here, and
there's something especially like appealing in Don't Starve about that, because you know it could all go away because you just
need one accidental die, right? Fire.
It's gone.
Especially the Shipwrecked, I played a lot of the kind of spin-off, and that your base could get flooded by the sea as the tide came in, and that was always really depressing. Everything would just be wet.
That sounds terrible. All right, so let's move on. Star Wars Battlefront 2. There's a bunch of footage of the Starfighter assault mode. So it's just like a big space battle, 24 players, I think. And this is, I don't think we've seen any of the space battle stuff from the game. Maybe like some very brief sort of
flashes.
In-engine footage, but, you know, not really representative gameplay. So let me see if I can pull this
Play this, but it's amazing to watch other people playing it.
Did you guys get to check this out at all? See what it looks like?
I haven't looked at it.
I've seen the video.
It's Starfighter combat as you would expect. Let's see here if I can pull this up. They have a ton of different ships. They named, I think, well over a dozen maybe two dozen even different ships that are in this footage. So you've got your obvious X-wings, A-wings, Y-wings, TIE fighters, Poe Dameron's X-wing from the new movies. I think Darth Vader's TIE fighter, the Millennium Falcon, of course, and then a bunch of the capital ships. Like, I think this is like a Trade Federation battleship, base battleship.
It looks exactly
maybe
how you want it to look, right? That's what I love about
it. It looks great, and that's been, but that was kind of the case with the first Battlefront. I felt like was like it looked amazing, and then the first game you played it, and it was kind of like, oh, this is kind of simple. There kind of wasn't enough meat to it. So I'm wondering how meaty this mode is going to feel compared to, like, Rogue Squadron, for example, which was never exactly a deep game. It was pretty arcadey, but they just really nailed the feel of the ships, and I think they did a good job with, like, the mission design. Obviously, that was a single-player game. This is gonna be different, but it's going to have different kind of stages of combat with objectives for each side. So, it looks promising, I think.
Definitely.
It's at least nice to see Battlefront sort of expanding outward from what they did in the first game, and actually having space battles at all is a pretty good step. So that's Battlefront. I'm willing to give it a try next time. The first one I kind of bounced off of, but the idea of a class system in this game and space combat is like definitely enough to get me to jump back into it, but I'm also a giant Star Wars nerd, so that doesn't hurt either. Moving on, Shenmue. Should we talk about Shenmue? Did you both watch the trailer for
Moving on?
You know,
Bo was.
I'm just gonna keep making jokes about this business.
Bo was watching me like crack up at my desk earlier this week watching the Shenmue 3 trailer, which
I know people were very upset about the faces, the Botox.
This is early footage. It's like the first teaser video they've shown of the game. Obviously, it's going to look better.
It's just funny.
Already,
to
the environments
right now,
look
like...
the environments look really nice. It's easy to poke fun at, kind of harmlessly. Like, I'm not mad at this game at all. I'm not angry that it looks like it does.
I mean, he looks angry.
I'm just kidding. Does he look angry, or does he just look...
He just looks like a doll.
He's got an unfortunately small forehead that I think makes him look kind of madder than he possibly is.
So there's just a few shots of... like that. Characters who...
Right there.
I mean, it's just...
They're just kind of expressionless and also look... like they're carved out of plastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand this is early days, but I mean, if this is the first thing you're going to show people, just like, just make their faces move. I don't. It's.
So I think where Shenmue is now in this footage, it's kind of a strange combination of feeling kind of like this Vestigial Dreamcast era game with these very simple facial expressions and stuff, paired with a modern engine in Unreal Engine 4. So you get this like amazing lighting and like these super detailed environments, and then these characters who are just like
they're very
just like Joker plastered on smile sort of face, which made me think, if I had been the one pitching this game and making it, I think I would have gone for a deliberate throwback and made it look exactly like the original Shenmue on the Dreamcast. Maybe, you know, have it run at 1080p or whatever, but in terms of the amount of detail and the textures and like how many polygons were in the character models, make it a throwback Dreamcast game with just some nice like lighting touches here and there and things to sort of make it actually look better, but look how you remembered that first game looking. You know, I think that would have been a cooler approach and probably a better way to use the money they have than to try to go as high fidelity as they can.
Sort of like a Dreamcast Shenmue take on like pixel art or whatever, the 8-bit era
exactly,
that we've seen in a lot of indies.
Yeah, like a lot of games that use pixel art and kind of are trying to evoke a Super Nintendo aesthetic mm-hmm. or something. They actually look much better than a Super Nintendo game. They can do a lot more with, you know, with Unity or something, but they're trying to make it look mm-hmm. as you remember, you know, Star Ocean looking back in the day, or Chrono Trigger or whatever. Yeah. So I think that would have been a cool approach for Shenmue. Maybe it would have actually been harder than just using Unreal. Yeah. You know, I don't know how hard it is to sort of fake Dreamcast graphics, but I don't know, it can't be that hard, right?
Yeah, we say all this as people have no idea how to do it, but
yeah, granted we are not experts on game creating game graphics and everything that entails, but that's what I would have liked to see. I still think it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be quirky, it's going to be weird, but I think mostly Shenmue fans just care about getting the rest of that story.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I think there's, you know, it's on safe ground. People have been waiting for it for so long that they'll forgive it anything, I think, once it's here.
Hopefully it'll turn out well, though.
Always the hope, Wes.
We'll see. Okay, so here's the big one. Final Fantasy 15 is coming to PC. I think that's the biggest news at Gamescom for us, other than Age of Empires 4. Yeah. Those two are the big stories. We've been hoping Final Fantasy 15 was going to come to PC. I think it was around the release of the game that the director said they wanted to bring it to PC, but it would probably take about a year. And I think that's about how long it will have been. I don't remember when it hit consoles, but they're saying early 2018 for the PC version.
Yeah, that would be about right, I think.
Mm-hmm. So that's big news, and I think it bodes well for what few Final Fantasy games are not already on PC making mm-hmm. their way eventually. Yeah. They've hit most of the library.
I mean, it's the first Final Fantasy I've played in a while that I've really kind of loved and lost myself in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
really?
So
I mean,
so
it's absolutely mental. It's and there's this wonderful kind of weird homoerotic road trip vibe to the whole thing, and you know. But it's really, really good Final Fantasy.
So, yeah, tell us more about the homoerotic road trip thing. Because well, I don't think Bo and I...
So there's, there's basically a boy band of four, each with their own unique
with their
personalities.
Own little Batmobile
and,
here.
Yeah, that go off and are off on their sort of convoluted, very complicated quest. So there's Noctis, who is like a kind of... I'll narrate. What you're seeing here, the little blonde one is Prompto. His special skill is photography. That is Noctis, the angst prince. His special skill, fishing.
Okay.
As you would expect from an angst prince.
Yes. You also have Gladius, who is the big bare-chested man.
Yeah.
Yes. He's kind of good at exploring and finding things. And then
Prompto is the favorite, right?
Yeah, he's the twink. He's the cutie. But everyone quite likes Ignis as well, who is... So every time you camp and sleep over, Ignis will cook you up a meal, depending on the ingredients you've got. And also when you're out on various trips, if you kind of are picking up ingredients, sometimes he'll go, huh, and write down a recipe. So it's this weird kind of strange, you know, and they're always making jokes about it being bath night and stuff. So... It's a very strange world, but it's one that's so big and beautiful. I mean, it looks... I was playing it on a PlayStation 4 Pro on a 4K TV, and that was looking amazing. So I'm really excited how it can look on PC.
Yeah, so this footage we've been running is from a video that Square and NVIDIA put out showing off basically how pretty it's going to look on PC, and talking about some of the effects that they're... You know, like the NVIDIA game works, like graphical effects that they're going to be putting in the game. They haven't really talked about system specs or like performance stuff yet. Mm-hmm. We asked them. Our writer Joe wrote up a preview of the game from Gamescom. He got to play it. Said it played really well, but he was also playing on like an i7 CPU and a 1080 Ti. So. Surprise!
It works really well. Yeah.
So we don't know if it's going to be 30 or 60 FPS, which I think is a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we would hope that it would run at 60 or even unlocked. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And we don't know too much about, you know, what it's going to take to run this game decently on a system, you know, whether it'll run fine on an i5, what kind of graphics card you're going to need. I'm sure if you have a 1070 or a 1080, you'll be fine. But if you have something lower than that, still have questions about how well that's going to run.
Yeah.
The name is sort of weird. They're calling it Final Fantasy 15 Windows Edition.
Windows Edition, yeah.
That's a
Final Fantasy 15 Wii.
It's a slightly strange name there.
Yeah. I mean, more than anything for me, what I'm kind of excited about is, like, I love Final Fantasy games and grew up on them and was like, you know, the 7, 8, 9, 10 era was my jam.
Same.
And kind of after the, I guess, 11 and 14 are the MMOs, and then 12 is good and 13 is garbage. And
correct.
Just like, basically, I haven't had like a good single player Final Fantasy game time. And
this is good. And it's, you know, it's the combat's satisfying. The world's stunning. And
I hear the story goes a little off the rails.
I expect it to.
It does. The story is a bit crazy. And they had problems on the, I think they had on the console one, like, almost as soon as it came out, they then came out and went, oh, we're going to add some more bits to the story that might make it make more sense.
There was like a chapter in Infamous Chapter 9 or something, right? That they were like, oh, we're going to... It was like when Kanye put out, what was it, Wolves or something? He put out an album. He's like, oh, I'm going to fix that one track. Like, as soon as somebody criticized it, like, oh, I'm going to fix it. I think Square was the same.
So I think by the time you guys get it, I'm sure what they'll do is pack in all that kind of extra stuff.
But. Like, because, all that sort of turmoil around the launch and stuff sort of turned me off on it, and then also, like, I play everything on PC. Like, I don't have a PS4 Pro or anything to play this, so I just haven't played it yet. So I'm pretty excited to finally get a chance to dig into this new Final Fantasy. It's new to me.
Yeah, so they're saying early 2018. It's gonna run like up to 8K if you have the hardware for that.
Yeah.
No one's gonna have the hardware for that or a monitor for that, really. But future proofing, I guess.
I guess you could run it at 8K and then downsample to 4K.
You could try. Yeah, you could try.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. What else is there to say about this one? Mod support is something that they said that they want to do. So I don't think there's been like a really specific confirmation of, yes, we're going to have mods and this is how it's going to work. But I know that they said they want that. So Steam Workshop for this game would be amazing. I'm guessing it's probably not going to have something that integrated. It'll probably be a bit more ad hoc, like people just hacking into the files and figuring out how they can mod stuff. But there's like a fairly active community of people modding the older Final Fantasy games on PC, just either fixing little issues with the ports or kind of just mucking around with them. Like, I know people have made the port of like Final Fantasy VI, for example, look a bit nicer than the god-awful like mobile garbage that Square put on PC.
Yeah.
So hopefully Final Fantasy XV PC gets some cool and weird mods.
Well, I think it's got such a invested community that, you know, you're going to see some...
Like, I want to see character models for all the cast, you know, like play as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or something, or play as the Ghostbusters. Why not?
Yeah. Classic road trip.
Angst-ridden Ghostbusters.
So that's Final Fantasy XV. Let's move right along to the next Gamescom news. Jurassic World Evolution got announced. I think this was a surprise for most of us, for everybody.
I don't think anyone had... I hadn't heard any whispers.
So Jurassic World Evolution is a park builder, city builder type game from Frontier, who made Elite Dangerous and also made Planet Coaster last year. And I think a large part of their staff had also made the older, like, Roller Coaster Tycoon games. Is that right? So they obviously have a history with making these kind of games. And this feels like a pretty amazing pairing of, you know, their talents for making a game like Planet Coaster with making...
I feel like I used to have, in my younger days, a version of Zoo Tycoon that was dinosaurs.
There was a Jurassic Park game just like this about 12 years ago or something, early 2000s.
I feel like I definitely played it in a like middle school computer lab. Played some sort of dinosaur wrangling thing.
Yeah, I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but there was a Jurassic Park park builder game. but obviously this one is going to be much newer and probably using the same engine as Planet Coaster. We reach out to them to try to get more details on it, and they haven't. Unfortunately, they're keeping it close to their vest for now, so we don't know much more than.
Well, I'm sure it's that thing of the minute you're doing anything with a kind of movie IP as well, you're under pretty strict rules
about
what
you can and
can't. You
have to get everything checked
by, yeah, talk about
17 producers and stuff. So this is all just like a cinematic kind of showing you what the game's going to look like, but I think we can get a taste of like what the gameplay is going to entail through this video, which includes dinosaurs eating people.
Yes.
Shit going wrong. Lots of jungle with some kind of high-tech park buildings in the background. We've got a monorail going around. So
probably a tiny house for Chris Pratt that you can build.
Yeah, what is the movie
fence him in.
Tie-in going to be like for this? Like, is it going to actually have...
I guess
Jurassic Park,
breeds,
Jurassic World characters.
Species.
I don't know any of the characters in that movie.
What I want to know is the objective basically to just, build a profitable theme
park? Because surely the joy is having them go on the rampage.
Yeah, that's what I wanted. Maybe there's
is there a mode?
Maybe there's a button kind of press that's like, and the things go wrong.
Well, you used to be able to do that in the, at least in the original SimCity games. I think it was SimCity 2000 that
I mostly 2000
played.
Had the disaster
attack.
You could just send in a
the file
or
menu.
Something.
Yeah. Godzilla, hurricane or tornado or floods or something. And I think I would typically build a city for
and then
3 or 4 hours and get bored and just be like, all right, 7 Godzillas. Let's call that in. Let's just get tornadoes all over the place. Yeah. Burn everything down.
It's like when I start deliberately messing up my Sims' lives, making them make bad choices.
How long do you get into their life before you're tired of them and just want them to die?
I mean, not that long. Usually, because usually I'm trying to build, the perfect family and the perfect house. And then the minute they start to deviate from my dreams and aspirations for them, it's like, well, no, you're dead to me. And
and then
I'm just going to...
dead characters.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool if the game... if it incorporates basically like a resource management, like being basically a combination of the like theme park builder with this like, I guess a Don't Starve type thing where you're I don't know if it you want to be actually like mining materials or anything, but dealing with, because I could see, if you're dealing with power fluctuations or the resource management of this, and then maybe that's why your fences go down and the dinosaurs start attacking or something.
Yeah, maybe there's like research resources for to bring back new or old species.
that would be really cool if you had a tech tree for actually putting dinosaurs in your park.
Yeah.
You don't just magically get all the dinosaurs. Yeah. You have to,
because I know in Zoo Tycoon as well, you were trying to get them to breed as well, but obviously in Jurassic Park they don't want them to breed. So maybe you're trying to
what if they breed
running around giving them contraceptive pills
without your permission?
Life finds a way.
I think it would be cool to see a builder game with kind of a survival mode, and maybe this actually existed in the original Jurassic Park game that was kind of in this vein. But when you play City Skylines, they did add disasters to that game eventually, but you're not playing like against nature. You're not like, oh, I have to really like fortify my city and be prepared for disasters. It's just kind of a thing to add flavor to the game. Mm-hmm. But if this had a mode or kind of the way the game worked by default was the dinosaurs are going to escape. Like, this is going to happen. Shit's going to go wrong. You're going to have random storms and power outages that let them do this and eat park attendees and stuff. And the whole game is about managing.
Yeah, maybe there's
crises.
A counter for like how
that's
many
sort of what I,
members
what
of
I was
the public
yeah.
have died. You know, if more than 200
it's,
people
it's
die, your
whole,
park will be
the
closed.
Whole, the whole game is just a PR, like dealing with the fallout.
To design your promotional campaign, it's like, yeah, some people got eaten last July. Yeah,
but dinosaurs, man.
We're offering great
the
care
real
pack,
dinosaur
great packages
experience.
Right now. I mean, it's just like the cruise ship where like they had the disaster at sea where like everybody got dysentery or diarrhea or whatever, and like the ship was broken down and everything was bad, and everyone's like, we never want to take a cruise again. So like for a while after that, you get really good cruise line tickets for a sail, for a song. Yeah. So that game's gonna be pretty great, I think, if they're building it off the base of Planet Coaster.
Yeah.
It's hard to see them going wrong with that as like a really established thing.
No,
already.
The pedigree is there, and it's, mm-hmm. you know, I can see us all comparing Jurassic Parks.
Yeah, who's gonna be my star dinosaur?
I mean, it's got to be a carnivore, right? You've got to. Like that's what people
pay to
see.
The T-Rex is such an easy choice, though. You know, you want something
like
weird,
really,
right? I want a giant.
They're not so man. Yeah. They're not so fashionable anymore. The T-Rexes.
How about a pterodactyl cage?
Like a... Yeah, that didn't go well in Jurassic World, did it?
I never actually saw Jurassic World.
Yeah, me either.
The new one, yeah. Chris,
how are you even talking about this?
I like Chris Pratt, but I don't know. It all the reviews talked about how generic it was.
Oh no, it's terrible. but you know, the pterodactyls escape from their pterodactyl aviary, and they, for no reason, kill one slightly arsy British assistant who it's been decided deserves to die. It's worth watching. It's a good B movie.
All right, so we've got a little bit more Gamescom news. This is kind of a smaller one, but there was a talk, I guess. I'm not sure how this was shown off, actually, but PlayerUnknown himself showed off a new in-the-works map.
Brendan?
Yes. Brendan Green, I believe is his name.
He seems a very nice man.
He really does, yeah. He was not nearly as mysterious as you would expect when he came on screen.
Player unknown.
He was on the Xbox stage at E3, yeah. I think, right? And he just seemed like kind of a nice guy. Yeah. But anyway, he had some kind of talk at Gamescom. I guess he did the keynote, actually. And he showed off just an early look, a couple screenshots of a new map coming to Battlegrounds. I don't know when it's going to be in the game. It could be after the early access period is over, maybe still during early access. I can pull up a screenshot here for our Twitch audience, but it's basically a desert map. Nothing too crazy here.
Tick sand, tick scrub brush.
A lot of buildings in close proximity. Mm-hmm. So you've got kind of like a downtown, like city hub, I guess. With some pretty large buildings that presumably you'll be able to get up on top of some of these. I see some stairs on some of them and some kind of more open areas. There's this very ominous mountain range in the background. I'm guessing the whole city is probably encircled by mountains so that you can't wander too far. But this seems like it will be a pretty big departure from the existing map. I don't think any of us are Battlegrounds players.
No, not really.
None of us have really.
I feel like I failed. I feel like I should be. But
it does though look really cool. Like especially if these buildings are, you know, fully built out on the inside, I could see that leading to some pretty cool.
Lots of pylons as well. I feel like it's going to be sniper heavy.
Yeah,
it does seem like a lot of potential for snipers given how many buildings there are. You could easily just find a window somewhere to hole up in and just take down anybody going down a street. But I don't know, maybe some cool building to building.
Yeah,
combat.
I'm imagining like building to building or even like some floor by floor combat of if, you know, a team sets up on the top floor of some place and then people having to fight their way up would be pretty cool.
Okay, well, that kind of takes us through most of the big news from Gamescom. So I'm going to move us on to Boverwatch news.
Yeah, which, I mean, it is coming out of Gamescom, most
fair.
Of this news.
Yeah.
But there is...
There's been enough Overwatch stuff to kind of give it its own section here, I think.
Yeah, so let me...
Will you be commenting on the Australia controversy?
Controversy? I didn't even realize there was controversy.
Well, they used the word takeout on an Australian map instead of takeaway.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is...
We'll have to call in Sean Prescott, our Australian correspondent.
They've had to put out a statement where they said we're still learning.
I thought Overwatch was supposed to be this global game Yeah, so speaking of Australia, yes, this map you're referring to, there is a new Overwatch map coming. It is called Junkertown.
Yes.
It is set in Australia, in the Australian outback. It is home of Junkrat, the Junker Junk.
You don't say.
Yeah, it's like this Mad Max kind of inspired, you know, Thunderdome-y.
The harsh and unforgiving outback.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly what you would expect from a Junkertown type place. But so it's a new escort map. You got to get on the payload. I believe the rough story of the map is you are attempting to, I guess, defeat the queen of Junkertown, and there's a plot to bring her all these riches. And
is she related to Junkrat?
Probably not. I don't know.
Like, what if he's a prince? Is he the prince of Junkertown?
Maybe he is.
I mean,
he's
got junk in his name. He does. Right?
Well, yeah, he's a junker, and it's Junkertown. But yeah, so you're escorting this payload. It is covered in gold and the riches of Junkrat and Roadhogs.
See, that's a take out then.
God, which is disgraceful.
Yeah, that's not
Blizzard,
good.
Blizzard, what were you thinking?
Insensitivity.
Especially good is the Scrooge McDuckian vault that you will hopefully
full
be able
gold.
To dive into. Yeah. And yeah, so it's just a new map. Pretty cool. Excited to play it.
It looks, I mean, all their stuff. I'm rubbish at Overwatch, but every time I see something from Overwatch, it brings me joy because mm-hmm. There's so much love in it.
Yeah.
They put so much detail into this map that you can see just watching this trailer even. A totally custom payload for
I mean, all like, the payloads are sort of unique to the map. You know, in one of them, you're escorting the like limo of a movie director, and one of them is the bomb that you're escorting. So
I guess it especially stands out to me when it's a pile of junk.
Yeah, well, a pile of junk and riches that is, I believe, a cleverly disguised bomb. But yeah, so Junkertown is coming. It's, I believe, playable now at Gamescom, and will probably hit the PTR sometime in the next couple weeks and on to release soon after that. But other cool stuff that is coming, I don't know if there's really anything to pull up to show off visual aid-wise, but there's some pretty exciting balance changes coming that's in addition to what's currently on the PTR.
So the big one is D.Va, right?
Yeah, D.Va is getting a pretty big change. Her defense matrix is basically getting cut in half in terms of her power. The energy drain is increased, doubled. So
that's the cost of using it, is that right?
Yeah, it has this like energy meter that as you hold it down, the meter depletes, and then when it's not in use, it recharges
so it's
over
depleting
time.
Twice as fast.
Yeah,
now
yeah. So your effective uptime of the ability is cut in half. But in exchange, so that's obviously a pretty significant nerf to her survivability. But the trade-off is she can now shoot her guns while using boosters, so she can like fly around and shoot at the same time. She's also getting a new ability. It's like a long-range rocket attack that does kind of small AoE damage. So the idea here is to basically kind of shift up the way that D.Va has played a fair bit, letting her be more aggressive, less reliant on defense matrix, and hopefully that'll kind of shake up the dive meta some that she is so important to in keeping the squishy dive heroes alive. So I think that's pretty cool. Another thing that's coming, we don't actually have any details about this yet, but during a kind of live stream Q&A, I think yesterday, Scott Mercer, one of the game's producers, mentioned that Mercy is also going to be getting some pretty big changes.
And that's a big deal because Mercy is probably one of the most played heroes, right?
She definitely is one of the most played heroes. She's like the pure healer of the game. She, for lack of a better word, is one of the easiest heroes to play because all you kind of have to do is stand there, attach your healing beam to people who are hurt, and stay alive. There's obviously a lot more to it than that, and people who are good at playing Mercy are highly valued. But yeah, she's a very important hero to the cast, and but she also has a lot of problems, mainly that she, for a lot of people, is boring to play. She a lot of times feels essential to matches, so people feel like they can't play the other heroes or the other healing support heroes. And also her ult, Resurrect, is sort of the opposite of... It changes her playstyle where when you have ult, it discourages you from actually playing because you
want to not die, so you can't be in the fight, like healing people. And so it's actually a better strategy often to not do your job and just stand in the back and then res people once they've died. So it's just an all around kind of problematic situation. And they haven't said at all what they're doing to change her.
Do you have any guesses of how you could make Mercy better?
I really don't know.
Now's the time to put the wish list out there.
Yeah,
this is your chance, Bo.
Well, put your mark on Overwatch. I don't know, because I don't play Mercy.
But you've played against Mercy, right?
I have played against Mercy and with Mercy. I'm going to say I don't know, because I have commissioned our resident Overwatch expert, Damien, who's a pro player, to write on this very subject. And so later this week, we will
get back to you.
We will have a take on...
But we'll soon have opinions.
Yes, I ask the experts and they tell me what I should feel about this game that I care so much about.
And so last, we have a new cinematic from May.
This broke my heart.
That just came out today.
The Overwatch animated short. Today.
Yeah. I nearly had to go home.
It's heartbreaking. But yeah, it's the story of May. We sort of already knew this story. You could find out a fair bit of the info from the in-game lore, but... Yeah, basically May was this researcher out on a remote Arctic base, and
is this really sad?
It's super sad. She basically, there's a storm and they go into cryo sleep. That's what's supposed to be for just like the duration of the storm.
Rachel can't take it.
Instead of waking up a few weeks later, she wakes up 9 years later and her entire team is dead.
Nice.
And
tragic.
Yeah.
This is like Pixar quality, by the way.
Blizzard's animated shorts.
Hurry up and
really
do like a series
top-notch.
Or a movie. That's my feeling. Because I love Overwatch, I love the lore. I'm not good at the game, but I want more of the stories in the world. And
it seems
the
inevitable,
comics are great.
Right? Like, how is there not going to be like a Disney XD Saturday morning Overwatch show?
I feel like there should be.
Or a Netflix.
If any game has ever been the right thing to, you know, have a really great movie or TV show, then this is it.
I mean, they've done a lot of these Overwatch the animated shorts, and all of them are this fantastic high quality animation. And so that's a commonly held opinion people would really love to see.
So what if the Overwatch show was used the same structure as Lost, where like 60%
flashbacks.
So 60% of the episode is about and some kind of current Overwatch
conflict.
Can we talk
about the slippers as well? Look at the amazing
so
little sleepwear she's in.
So the show would be bouncing between current Overwatch conflicts and then past backstories for the characters.
Yeah, I mean, because the Overwatch mythos and overall plot like has stretched about, I think, 80 to 100 years at this point in terms of the stories we've been getting. So I think that actually is a setting or a format
she's
that would work.
That's pretty dark.
Yeah. She's making them tea and then she finds out, oh no, we've been
and
asleep 9 years.
So how often do they put these shorts out? Is it like every 6 months or so? No, it's more often than that.
Yeah, it's more often than that. The
It doesn't feel like it's on a schedule, does it? It feels like they kind of when they're ready.
We've been getting a new hero roughly every 4 months, I think. 3 to 4 months. The animated shorts are less scheduled. And this one doesn't really have... It's not tied to anything. Like, it has nothing to do with Doomfist, the newest hero. It has nothing to do with Junkertown, the newest map, or like any of the new modes or whatever. So it's just a little piece of Overwatch history and telling the story of May.
All right. Well, I'm going to move us on to the Q&A. So if you want to ask us some questions, go ahead and start typing those in the chat.
AMA.
But before we get to that, I want to take a bit of a detour based on something you said.
Off the script. What are we doing?
We'll
do it live.
Bo, during your description of Junkertown, you mentioned the Scrooge McDuck-esque vault that was in Junkertown. Have you guys both watched the new DuckTales?
I haven't. Should I?
I haven't yet. I've heard
it's
super good.
Oh, my God. Well, you have just ruined my tangent here because I was going to talk
to you cast,
about
which is, like,
how
amazing.
Good the
DuckTales is. I used to love DuckTales, although it gave me the DuckTales the movie gave me nightmares.
I can see that. As a kid, yeah.
The kind of creepy bad character.
A little intense. Yeah. So the new DuckTales, I was honestly shocked by how good it was because I had watched the... I'd seen, like, some screenshots from it, and the art style hadn't totally won me over. Mm-hmm. And as I think... is it David Tennant? It's David Tennant is a new Scrooge. I thought he was good, but it's still hard to hear anyone other than Alan Young as Scrooge. Mm-hmm. You know, he did that role for so long. But I would say within a couple minutes of watching the new show, you can just tell how good it's going to be. You can tell, like, the voices for the characters are... They're fine. Like, the new... the individual voices for the new nephews actually gives them each a real personality, whereas in the original DuckTales...
You can't really discern the difference between...
They were a character, right? They were the nephews, exactly. And Scrooge was kind of the driving force. The new show, it has some classic Donald Duck in there. Like, he's wearing a throwback... like sailor's uniform from, like, the old comics.
Nice.
He like staples himself to a wall at one point in, like, a fight with a stapler because he loses his temper. So it has some good Donald slapstick. The nephews all have their unique personalities, but it's not trying to, like, beat you over the head with it. Scrooge sounds younger, but he sounds great. Like, it's a perfect balance between homage to that original character and kind of a newer, younger voice. The animation style is gorgeous. It looks really good in motion. It's free on YouTube. They put the first episode up. It's like a double episode.
Definitely
so
won't
it's,
just be watching that this afternoon.
Yeah, it's like 45 minutes long. I highly recommend it. I think the show itself starts in like a month or something. Mm-hmm. They put out this first episode as sort of a premiere ahead of time. But yeah, it's really good stuff. So go watch DuckTales.
Yeah. I'm on board.
If you like original DuckTales, go watch DuckTales. If you've never seen DuckTales,
go watch
Someone's
DuckTales.
Someone's asked
go watch
a DuckTales. DuckTales question.
All right. Yeah, ask exclusively DuckTales questions. And,
extra
and I will get to your question for sure. And also thanks to everybody who has subscribed on Twitch today during the show. I haven't read out all the names, but I know I saw a few new subscribers. We really appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Let's take some questions. Varendeel asks, what games do you think don't get nearly enough love, whether it's poor review scores or just not as well known as it deserves? For me, it's the Tropico games. I never hear anyone talking about them, but I think they're brilliant.
I've never played a Tropico game, but I will go home tonight and play a Tropico game.
On that recommendation?
That. Yeah.
Well, you have like six to choose from or something. Yeah. So five maybe? There's a bunch of Tropico games.
Which one should I start with? Someone tell me. Internet, tell me.
Yeah, tell us the best Tropico, Varendeel, since
beginner.
You're a fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, what are games that you think just don't get enough love?
I mean, I think that we've had a little bit of discussions about this, but Prey was really very highly regarded, but then didn't sell super well, and I think not enough people played that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think so much of that was the people... The marketing of it, people kind of in their heads had it as, well, this is just Dishonored in space, and it's so different from that, and it's so, you know, it's so much fun just running around with the systems in that sandbox, and yeah, I felt like that got a really rough ride, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's on sale right now, actually. There's, I think, a Humble Store, a bunch of Bethesda games are on sale, and Prey is like 50% off.
Oh, it's definitely worth picking up. It's just, you know, you'll just have, if you're the sort of person that likes going in and finding ways to sort of break games and trick systems, it's kind of built because it wants you to do that. Everything about it is begging for you to kind of find a weird way to solve a problem.
To solve a problem.
Yeah.
I'll throw out one that I've maybe mentioned on the podcast before, but I've definitely talked about it in our Discord channel with our PC Gamer Club members. This game I love that's on Steam, Super House of Dead Ninjas. It's a...
Never heard of this game.
It's about probably four years old now. It's a throwback to SNES, like, action platformer games.
Nice.
And complete with, like, a CRT scanline filter, if you want to turn that on, and... fake slowdown, when the screen gets really busy with particle effects and stuff. So that's optional. You can turn it on or off if you want. I really like it on because there's this great feeling of when there's a bunch of enemies coming at you and you're like, it's basically a super fast action game, 2D action game. So you're like slicing heads off dudes with your ninja sword and like throwing katanas and bombs at stuff. And when you get in kind of a flow state with it, you can just tear through levels. Mm-hmm. And when you decapitate like three enemies with one swing or something, the frame rate like drops down to, you know, 12 FPS or something like that for a couple seconds, which feels really authentic to Super Nintendo games that just couldn't handle too much stuff on mm-hmm. screen at one time, like R-Type or Gradius or something. So it's a really fun game. It's a roguelike, but you get some meta progression, so you unlock like extra lives mm-hmm. and new weapons and stuff so that you can kind of make it further and further through this tower that you're trying to descend as you go. And it's like $5 on Steam or something, yeah. So highly recommended. Let's see. Scorpooler asked, do you guys think we'll get a new DuckTales game?
Yes.
All right.
I mean, I think if you're launching any new TV show, surely you've got that built into the plans somewhere. Like, it might not be a good one, and it might be like a, you know, iPad and only.
Disney has, you know, game studios.
Well, that's it. I mean, it'll be there in some, maybe a Switch game or a, you know.
It may not and probably will not be good, but there will be a game.
The original DuckTales is great.
Though, yeah.
So. Yeah.
Let's see. Dragoa X asks, can you talk about Quake Champions and QuakeCon? We can talk about it a little bit. I don't know if... Have you played Quake Champions at all, Rachel?
No.
Yeah, so I don't think any of us have played mm-hmm. Quake Champions yet. It just hit early access today, I believe. So eventually...
Because QuakeCon's starting today, right?
I believe it starts tomorrow.
Huh.
I think it starts tomorrow. But yeah, so Quake Champions is going to be free to play eventually, but right now you have to buy in through early access. I think it's $40, or 30 or 40 bucks mm-hmm. for the like champion founders pack or whatever they're calling it. None of us have played it yet, but it is on the docket. We'll have impressions on it pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple guys on the ground at QuakeCon, so we'll have some hands-on stuff with Evil Within, with Quake Champions, with Wolfenstein. We'll have some interviews coming out of the show. So expect that on the site over the next 4 days or so.
Yeah.
So Austin Wood, shout out to Austin. He's a writer for the site. He actually asked a question in chat. He said, what do you want from the new PUBG map? Since none of us play PUBG, we're not the best people to answer
puppies.
This one.
I would like a map with puppies.
I have no idea what to say.
I would like to see it play substantially differently from the other map, like feel like kind of a different game in the way you have to approach the strategy of how you survive on this map and when you engage in fights and stuff like that, and hopefully not reveal any sort of deficiencies in the grand scheme of the PUBG design. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of a shame for them to launch the second map and then be like, oh, this game kind of only works well because of
the one map,
elements of this one map or something. But I don't think that's gonna be a problem.
I was just thinking, like, I wonder if they could do a different version of the shrinking circle that you have to, you know, the force field you have to play inside. Like, I don't know, maybe that still exists, but every so often, like, different buildings will explode or something, and periodically there's less and less places to hide.
We're getting a few votes for Tropico 4 as the go-to
Internet.
Tropico game.
I will hit up my Steam account.
Okay, let's see. What else we got? Questions. Have there been any updates to the Harvest Moon game that's coming to PC? Asks BattleTank09. I haven't seen any in a while.
No. And I am quite excited about it.
The Harvest Moon game?
Yeah.
Have you seen what the Harvest Moon game looks like?
Is it bad?
It's bad, yeah.
Oh. I just want there to be a good Harvest Moon game.
So the good Harvest Moon game is Stardew Valley.
So I think I've talked about this before a long time ago on the podcast. The Harvest Moon name no longer resides with the developers of Harvest Moon.
Oh.
It's this weird thing where I believe Natsume is the was the longtime publisher of Harvest Moon in the States.
Yeah.
But, and they own the name, but they did not actually develop the games. They still own the name and have now taken over development the past 2 years or so and have made some real bad looking mobile Harvest Moon games. Mm-hmm. And the original development team of the Harvest Moon series now makes the Story of Seasons games on the 3DS, which are supposed to be quite good. They're basically modern Harvest Moon. Those, unfortunately, have not been announced for PC in any capacity yet. So I would not have any high hopes for Harvest Moon.
That makes me sad.
They look very cheap, unfortunately. Let's see, what else do we have?
I saw one that asked, what's the game that you disliked but have had to finish? But as people that work writing about video games, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's
yeah, what's
a good
the game
Mutton
you've
Bandit.
Least enjoyed playing?
Mutton Bandit asked, yeah, what's the game you've least enjoyed playing but completed anyway?
I mean, that's true of when you're reviewing stuff of so many games. Yeah. Because
that's like why I don't like writing game reviews.
Well, especially if you're going to be mean, you're sort of even more under even more pressure to kind of give it a fair. Mm-hmm. A fair hearing. I think maybe the official Lost game made me the most angry and sad, and I had to finish it. That was upsetting.
So this isn't a PC game, but I recently played Yoshi's Island for the first time and did not care for Yoshi's Island. played all the way through it. Wonderful looking game, great graphics, tons of personality. Baby Mario can fuck right off with his wailing.
I'm going to get you a t-shirt with that on. Yeah, I mean, it depends. If I'm just playing for me personally, I'm so promiscuous with my Steam account. So I just, if within 10 minutes I'm annoyed with something, I'm moving on. Yeah. Life's too short.
I rented Final Fantasy 13 when that came out and played the first half of that game, which is the real bad half, as opposed to the less bad half, and then I returned it. So I don't know if that counts as finishing it. I finished my rental period.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a good example for this. I think I similarly ditched the game if I'm not enjoying it.
So Turdog asked, is anyone in the office going to try the Destiny 2 beta?
Yes.
And definitely. Oh, sounds like you're going to be playing
it. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'll have a choice.
Tim and James will absolutely be playing it, and probably all of us as well.
Probably some of our UK colleagues will be on there. I probably won't play the beta. I'm actually going on vacation next week anyway, so I won't be around to play it. But I'll probably play
come back in the office or just be
out, yeah. Destiny.
Tim will probably be in withdrawals from not being able to play it.
Well, I think he's banned any sort of vacations or leaving the country until December now from Destiny launch until December. So he'll be playing almost full time.
So in our Discord channel earlier, JBJ Blaze asked, if I may ask for the show, with Quake Champions having now hit early access, do you think more AAA studios may follow suit with their games? And is this trend just getting worse?
That's a good question. We've had a lot of discussions about early access in general and whether it's a good or a bad thing.
I think if you're a studio, AAA or not, you want as much money as you can up front. And if they think people will pay for it, they'll keep doing it.
I think early access is a very powerful tool for small developers, especially those who want to make a game but can't or don't want to work on it full time.
Yeah.
I have several friends who they make a game, they like have a game that's their project and it's in perhaps perpetually early access because they have a day job and like making this game is what they do on the side, and the game can just kind of exist and people can buy it or pay some for it and they can continue to add features while making it at their own pace. And I think that that's really great that it, is a way for people to make a game like that. But if you're making it early access purely for the sake of getting more money out of it, then that's obviously terrible and should not be encouraged whatsoever.
I think I'm more comfortable with developers, bigger developers, using early access as a way to gather feedback and and change their game for the better than I am them using Kickstarter or crowdfunding in the same way. Yeah. Like if you're a company that can afford your continued existence, you can afford these big marketing budgets, you can afford all this stuff, do you really need to go to your fans for $1 million to kickstart this project? You know, because early access, I think we're going to continue to see more of the kind of sticky questions we've seen, like with Ark Survival Evolved, where they're changing the price of the game in early access. They're releasing paid expansions while the game is still doesn't perform well or has issues in early access. We're just going to get more complications like that as more bigger companies use early access, I think. But in general, I'm all for the ability to put a game out there and think like, oh yeah, we have our magic system down, it's awesome, and then people come in and play and poke a million holes in it.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't put it out in early access, that's either a shitload of post-game patches that you have to do, or like, oops, that system just sucks forever.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I definitely agree that is a good approach to it. Using it to gather feedback. And if it's approached that way, I'm pretty okay with it.
Let's see if we can get one or two more questions in here. Anybody else have a question for us before we sign off?
If you've asked a question and we've missed it, feel free to throw it up again and we can try and grab
Mutton it. Bandit also asked, if you were in Twitch chat right now, what would you ask?
Oh, that's meta.
Yeah. I would ask, why aren't other people asking questions?
All right. Well, we can call it there. I think we've got a... We answered some good ones. There's a ton of news coming out of the site for the next like week and a half, because we've still got Gamescom stuff kind of rolling through. Mm-hmm. QuakeCon is this weekend. Next weekend is PAX.
Yeah.
So, and the Destiny beta in between that stuff. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of news hitting. We're going to be at PAX. We're going to be shooting a bunch of videos. So you get to see a lot of cool games, a lot of indie games from PAX. I won't be there. I'll be on vacation.
I enjoy the question. Yeah. What have you been talking about? I'm late. Well,
lucky for you,
roll it back here. As usual, you can find us here twitch.tv/PCGamer at 1 o'clock on Wednesdays, 1 o'clock Pacific. And you can find us on YouTube/PCGamer, obviously PCGamer.com. You can find our podcast on iTunes, pretty much wherever you would expect to find it.
Subscribe.
Google rate, it. You'll find us. Yeah. Leaving a review really helps for the podcast.
My mom might read it.
Yeah, unless it's a bad review, because then you'll make Rachel's mom cry.
Yeah. She's very sensitive.
That would be pretty rude. So yeah, don't do that. So we'll be back next week. Someone will be here next week.
I might be back.
Probably James. Yeah. I won't be here.
Where are you going?
So I'm going back to Georgia to visit friends and family. I will be sweating profusely.
Because can you bring us a present? Hot there.
Can you bring the heat pack?
Do you want some humidity from Georgia?
I can bring a jar of humidity.
I might bring you some fried southern food or something, or a shirt.
Is there
that
like
says,
a Georgian candy?
I mean, peaches are a big thing.
There's like saltwater taffy from
saltwater
Savannah.
Taffy. There's
but that's not where you're going.
Boiled peanuts.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Real disgusting southern thing.
Your definition of candy is loose.
I'm just trying. Okay?
Peaches, peanuts. You've listed several things that literally none of them are candy.
Well, I can't think of a candy, so I'm giving you alternatives. Some good barbecue. Yeah. So that'll be my week next.
Still not
week.
Candy.
Chick-fil-A.
Again, not candy.
There isn't a candy. This is what we've established. All right, I think that's a wrap for this week. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.